Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 11, Breaking Bad. Title sounds familiar. I'm trying to place it.
Yeah, I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah. I think everybody understands what we're doing here. Breaking Bad, you know, it's the title of the other show.
Cool.
This is the episode.
High energy intro to this episode, to this high energy episode.
The episode where it all meets, right? We finally get our cameo that everyone's been banging the drum for.
We do.
From Bryan Cranston, and I almost said Jesse Plemons. Nope. Aaron Paul. And I got to ask, was it worth it? You asked for it. Is this what you wanted?
For my part, I would say yes. I feel like this is pretty classic Jesse and Walt interaction. It's bickering over this goddamn Winnebago that they should have just replaced as soon as they started making a little scratch.
Yes. I think that it's interesting to me. I think that scene in isolation is not good. That scene taken with the other flashback scenes of Saul is pretty good. I think it's important for to understand, I guess, like the powers at play in Breaking Bad a little bit more. It adds a little bit more context there, a little more flavor, a little couple of extra fibers to that tapestry. I think we find out that kind of Jimmy is the main character in all of this universe.
Yeah, he's kind of the instigator for so much of this shit.
I mean, you could look at Walt and say, you know, he's also an instigator, but like you take it all the way back, and maybe this would change if they did another prequel, right? With another character.
Mm-hmm.
Like they did the Huel prequel, and suddenly Huel somehow is the main reason for like the death of Gus and the death of Mike. But like when I'm looking at this episode and I'm seeing these scenes, these flashbacks, I'm thinking, well, this is where it all led, the end of Breaking Bad. And if you had not pushed to get Walt back into this, or not back into this, but into this at all, and you know, discovered him in the desert, if he hadn't walked into your office and you hadn't been the person you are, they would not have died the way they did, right? And especially, it's not super sad that Gus dies because he deserved it, I'm sure.
They all kind of deserve
Mike,
it in the
though.
End, but but he's also, how much heinous shit has Mike actually done? Just because he has a moral compass, it doesn't mean that he's not guilty of
I agree.
Cleaning up a lot of stuff.
I agree, but also I like him.
I like him too.
I think if he were given better paths,
I hated his
better.
I mean, spoiler alert, I guess, but I hated his death in Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
especially who killed him. Ugh.
Yeah, but I mean, Jimmy. Not even indirectly, but almost directly leads to a lot of that.
Yeah, he introduces Jesse and Walt to the Gus Enterprise.
Yeah,
if it weren't for him, they would just be small fries, and probably they just would have gotten killed by somebody else.
And that's why I think
much sooner.
That's why I think that like that scene is better when paired with all the other stuff that you learn not through that scene, right? You learn it through the Mike scene.
Mm-hmm.
With him in his office running down Walt's qualifications or lack thereof.
Right.
Otherwise, this would just be fan service and I would hate it. And because I was never asking for Jesse and Walt to come back.
Like, right, yeah.
I'm fine if they want to do that, if they have a good idea
for
it.
But it was never
necessary
to the story.
No, absolutely not. I'm not the fan service kind of guy, typically.
Yeah.
I like it when they do it and it's good and it's enjoyable and has a use, a purpose in the show.
Yeah.
But man, if you just try and shoehorn that stuff in there, it's bad. Let's talk about Bad for a second, because this is a weird episode. I think this is my least favorite episode of the season, like by a long shot, actually. I think moment to moment, this episode is very enjoyable, but it adds up to a whole lot of nothing, pretty much.
Yeah.
There are things that it's doing that I think are somewhat important, but boy, it takes its sweet time doing it.
It really does. Yeah. The pacing of this episode. I don't know if it's just the pacing of the episode itself, or just the fact that it came on the heels of another episode that didn't really give us a lot of information.
That too.
So yeah, it's like two in a row, and then this one just feels so much slower. Like, we have some good, there are some good performances like early on in the episode, and then the rest of the episode is just more of the same.
And they really only tell us one thing. Gene is breaking bad again. Like,
right.
And this is the kind of stuff that you could do with Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad with a single look. You could literally do it with a 2-second shot of Bryan Cranston emoting.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get everything I needed to get from that, from an entire episode of Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
And it's not Bob Odenkirk's fault. I think he can do this stuff. He's a very capable actor. It's just the style of this show requires them to do montages and to do long, drawn-out cons. And frankly, there's a lot in this episode that happens that I roll my eyes at, mm-hmm. and I would look at it earlier in the series, and I would be like, oh, that's great. And I can think of specific examples, like the phone call with Kim, which we'll talk about here in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Kim, quote-unquote Kim.
The phone call to Kim, there shall we say.
That annoyed me here. It might not if this wasn't the last three episodes of the series.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an opportunity cost here in every single second of this episode, and they are not, they're paying a very high price for the scenes they are showing us.
Yeah.
Because we have so much precious, or so precious little time left.
Yeah.
So I did not like this episode overall. I'm sorry to say.
It's been one of my least favorite episodes too, maybe. Overall, not just this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking back on previous seasons earlier today, and I definitely enjoyed them a lot more overall. But episode-wise, this was kind of weak for me.
I think you're right. It's all about the Cinnabon stuff too, right? It's like two back-to-back. We're spending so much time with Gene now, but we're doing so very little with Gene.
Yeah, it really feels like things are being drawn out and... why? For what reason? Why could we have not just taken an episode off of the season or something?
At this point, it feels like, yeah, we should have taken it. We should have found a way to combine last week's episode with this one.
Yeah.
Give us one scam that can get us in there, or give us two shortened scams, something that gets us from, you know, Jeff being an adversary to Jeff being an ally to now Saul being Jeff's adversary. It's right. Like, you could have gotten there. It's just the way you're telling the stories. And I've not always been on board with the way the show tells its story. I think technically this is a very, very good show. But entertainment-wise, I'm nowhere near as entertained in this episode as I have been in pretty much all of Breaking Bad and most of this show.
I will say, I really did not need to see his friggin' whiskey catheter or whatever as many times as we saw it.
Yeah, man, they talked about that in the Insider cast. They were saying, well, we shot all this footage, we were picking up footage here and there, every location we shot we'd grab a little bit for the montage
because
we knew we were going to do that, and we wanted this Mickey Dolan song, I think is who it is, it's one of the Monkees, it's a demo song.
Sure.
We wanted that song, but the song was a little too short to use all of the footage we had. So we artificially extended the song. They made the song longer instead of throwing out some of the montage footage.
Yeah.
Which is what you do with a montage. You shoot a billion different things, and then you end up with like, okay, we can use this, this, and this, and these other things you got to throw away. Like, I mean, that's what B-roll, it's not what it's for, but it's like part of what it's for.
I understand variations on a theme, but how many variations are you going to jam in there? Especially when they... Should we talk about this later on, or can we talk about it now?
What is that?
That picture of all the different licenses together.
Oh, yeah.
They show us that way just how many times the scam has been run, and then the montage continues for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting good information. Here's the frustrating thing with this show for me, or this particular episode of this show.
Yeah.
I'm watching this episode for the first time, and I'm enjoying moment to moment. And then I get to the end, and I look back on it, and I'm like, what was that all for? I learned, like, one thing
mm-hmm.
that, like I said, could have been done in a single shot. And then I watch it a second time and I'm looking for the pieces that I would take out. And then I realize so much of this is crucial to the thing that they're, the story that they're trying to tell you in the way they're trying to tell it. Like, none of this stuff really needs to be pulled out. Some of it could be pulled out, I suppose, but there's nothing egregious. I look at this and I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, all these things are adding up. And then I get to the end and I feel empty about it. And I don't know why, because I don't usually feel that way with Better Call Saul.
Yeah, I think maybe it must be at least a little bit of an end of the series thing where you're just like, all right, let's do this thing. Let's get to the end of the series. Let's stop dragging our feet to get there.
Yeah, it's not even that it's really that opportunity cost thing. Like, mm-hmm. they're doing a whole episode on one thing, whereas I want 10 things to be happening because we have only 3 episodes left.
Yeah.
And I still want a lot of... Maybe it's just that I want more of the show. I don't know. But yeah, I don't feel like this about this season 4 or something this way. Mm-hmm. I really... Yeah. It's puzzling even to me why I feel the way I do about this show.
Yep.
And I know that's got to be frustrating as creators too.
It must be, yeah.
Like when you're trying to give... The audience A is telling you, half the audience is screaming, Walt and Jesse.
Sure.
And then the other half is screaming, not like this. And they're like, well, fuck you guys.
Right. It does seem like our opinion is not in the minority this time.
Yeah.
So I feel pretty good about it.
That's the thing. It's hilarious to me because we have a lot of people writing in to the show that we'll get to in feedback. And most of them, anybody who has a negative take on this show, mm-hmm. has started their email with, I might be in the minority here, or like, I'm sorry to say that I don't, you know, I don't feel like this was a very good episode, that kind of stuff, which tells you, you know, the general quality of this show, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. generally very high. And I don't know.
I think maybe a lot of us are kind of surprised at our reaction to this mm-hmm. week's episode, because it does just kind of feel like, we seriously considered not watching it a second time.
Yeah.
Just because it was so draggy.
If I wasn't podcasting about it, I certainly wouldn't have watched it a second time, but I needed to really dig in and get the details and try and sort out my feelings about it.
Exactly.
That didn't work.
Same feelings, turns out.
It just confused me because I could have come in here and ranted and raved about how angry I was about mm-hmm. how they wasted all this time and this and this. But now I got to come in and say, I don't get why I feel this way, because they didn't really waste a ton of time as best I can tell. But it felt like they did.
Yep.
Anyway.
That's how I feel about it, too.
Can we talk? Maybe we'll talk about it when we get there. It's like the first scene, or second scene, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about that Kim phone call. Okay. The Kim call.
Yeah. That happens right after the title sequence. You want to talk about the cold open?
Sure, let's get into the recap.
Okay.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret, Hush Hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So, we cold open in color on Saul being taken to the desert in a very familiar Winnebago.
Shouting, Abogado,
Abogado. Yo soy Abogado.
I love that callback.
This is Breaking Bad season one era.
Oh,
because
yeah.
The Winnebago still exists. It has not been crushed into a tiny little cube.
So is this a flashback or a flash forward at this point? Like, are we... Is this a Gene show now?
Back, I think. I think it's a Gene show now.
I think you're right. I think we have moved on from the Jimmy timeline. We're now full Gene timeline.
Yeah, I think.
And anything like that would be a flashback.
Yeah, any of the Saul stuff, I think, is just context for kind of his position in Breaking Bad. And maybe why, if you haven't already watched Breaking Bad, it would be a good thing to continue on with the canon.
Yeah, absolutely. I highly recommend Breaking Bad. It's one of my all-time favorite shows.
Yeah, it's a good show. There's some weird gender dynamics in the show that you can read up. You can read up about if you want.
Actually, in the show, or
no,
it the fandom.
Within the fandom, I guess the reaction to parts of the show, which I can get behind in some instances.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I'm with you. We talked extensively about that. We have a whole podcast.
Me
and Aaron did a whole podcast about Breaking Bad, covering every single episode.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if you want
to look
that,
forward to too.
Go look up Breaking Good.
Indeed. Not much else to say, really, about that cold open.
No.
There's a hole in the desert. He talks about Lalo. He does. Uh-huh. We see that again.
Yeah, and we're going to get more into that here in a bit.
Yeah. The title sequence, that tape is degrading. As you said it would.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah. That was your prediction, and you were right.
And we have two more episodes. How much more can it degrade?
I mean, we've already got the blue screen, so I don't know. It's going to start playing something different. After the title sequence, we cut to Francesca plunging the sink of her stoner tenants. She dodges a tail on her way to a payphone meeting with Gene, where she gets some cash and gives some updates.
All right. There's quite a bit of stuff that happens here.
Yes.
Maybe it'll just be a cat on a Roomba next time as the intro video.
I'd like that, but only if it's in a shark suit.
Oh boy.
That's a classic.
And eating an ice cream cone.
No, that's just silly. What are you talking about? This guy.
I love the line conjugate much.
Yeah.
My gosh, Francesca, she has to put up with such idiots all around her all the time.
She really does. She gets so much sass from people who are below her.
Mm-hmm.
I liked seeing Bill Oakley on a bus bench.
Uh-huh.
That was a nice little cameo.
He's got his own practice now.
He's got his own practice.
Eddie with a prior.
Yeah. And he's on the other side. He's defending.
Right.
He's defending scumbags instead of prosecuting them. So
that's pretty hilarious when she says he switched sides. And Gene's like, he came out, huh? No.
Come on, man.
You dummy.
Jeez.
I was surprised to find out that New Jersey is indeed shaped like Alfred Hitchcock in a fez. I had to look it up because nobody knows what New Jersey looks like. Not even people who live there know the outline of New Jersey. But it does.
It's like reverse California. Yeah. A little bit.
Sure. Ish.
Yep.
And all this stuff is like getting an update on the status of kind of the outside world, right? Like
in Albuquerque.
Because all we've seen of Gene is the covert parts, the part where he's trying not to be discovered.
He's hiding in Omaha.
We don't know, like, are the feds still after him? You know, it's been a while. Turns out they are. They're still tailing Francesca. They took his entire empire.
Seized all of his assets,
Yeah, totally gone. So that was nice. I like getting that bit of information. Adds a lot of context.
We also got updates on, like, every other third-tier character that he was working with that's still presumably alive.
Yeah, Kubi and Huel. And
yep. A couple other people whose names I don't remember.
Yeah. I was not asking for those updates, but I guess, sure.
If you're going to, just roll it into the conversation, sure, that makes sense. But then, the juiciest of the updates is that Kim did call once everything went to hell.
Yeah. And we can finally stop guessing what the phone call. Who's going to get the phone call? Who's going to answer?
Call.
Yeah,
right.
Like, who's on the other end? Well, it's turns out it's him.
Yeah, it wasn't all that fucking mysterious as it turns out.
Everybody was like, it's Kim, a birthday phone call, it's Kim. Like, well, it totally could be, and I was hoping for that too, but this makes a lot more sense. I mean, Gene would want to know, like, is it safe to poke my head up, you know? But clearly it's not.
Good performance as always from Francesca. She's wonderful. She's a great character.
And the Kim stuff, you know, Kim checked in on him. And then he gets to the very literal crossroads where he has to make a decision on whether to go back and try and contact Kim or whether to stay out of her life. And of course, he makes the most disruptive decision possible.
Naturally.
Both potentially to Kim, but also to himself.
Yep. Makes another call to a sprinkler shop in Florida to try to talk to Kim, and it doesn't seem to go well. It sure would have been nice to get a little more information from this thing that we've been just like starved for, but sure.
And why not
just have the street noise
hear it? Why not?
Because it's a trick, because he didn't actually talk to Kim. It's my running theory.
No, I he almost certainly didn't talk to Kim. I mean, that is not the reaction of a man who's talking to someone he loves for the first time in years. That's the reaction of a man who can't talk to someone, and he sees some idiot peon standing in his way from talking to someone who he's loved for years. So, like, I don't think he talked to Kim at all.
No, he got bad news in some form or another. Either she's moved on from this location, or she got eaten by an alligator.
The Florida pet shop?
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
Pet shop, the sprinkler shop.
What do you mean her guts were eaten by a crocodile?
What do you mean she was disemboweled? Crocodile, ugh.
Disemboweled by lemurs? Nothing. What the hell are you talking about?
Lemurs? Yeah. What do you think Florida is, man?
Cockatoo pecked her eyeballs out? Oh, God.
Yep, just those street cockatoos down there in Florida. You gotta watch out.
I think you're right, though. It's definitely like she either moved on from that location and the person doesn't know where she is.
Or maybe she's dead. Maybe she did dead.
I'm not sure which way I'm leaning on that. Based on his reaction, clearly, it was bad news about Kim one way or another.
Yeah.
The thing is, why not let us hear that news?
Sure.
What are you preserving? What are you telling us? Like, what are you telling us above and beyond hearing the conversation with not hearing the conversation? Because I remember them doing this. The other part of this is, why am I so annoyed about it? Because I remember them doing this exact same thing mm-hmm. with Howard and Jimmy in the copy room when Howard is telling him he's not going to hire him as lawyer.
Right.
Yeah, way back when. And I really liked that scene. I thought it was artistic. I thought it mm-hmm. was... It said everything you needed to say without a single word of dialogue being audible.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliantly done as well.
Right. And then we get to this and I'm pissed off. I'm like...
I think I might have a tiny bit of insight into that. My theory is that in the instance of Howard and the copier, it's a yes or no, right? That is the conversation. Sure. And you can tell with your eyes mm-hmm. that it's a no.
Obviously.
And that's fine. Whereas for this conversation, we don't have really any context for it, other than we see that he has a negative reaction to it afterward. But we don't know what he's...
I mean, I guess the yes or no here could be boiled down to, will he talk to Kim or not?
Yeah. Is she there?
Reconnect with Kim, yes or no. But, I mean, that might be part of it. There are a lot more possibilities. The space here is wide open to explore, and I want to know more details. But to me, the feeling is, like, this is a style over substance choice.
Kind of cheapens it a little bit.
And me. I was much more okay with that in a show that has X number of seasons ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm less okay with that with a show that has two episodes ahead of it.
Why are you still withholding information?
Right.
Yeah.
What is the
payoff? Is it actually going to be good, or is it just going to be another thing?
And is this... Because, like, if there isn't a payoff, if they, like, never come back to this conversation and why he was so angry about it... Which they almost have to.
No, I think they will.
But if they don't, it's going to be really annoying.
They definitely will. They have to. Especially after showing mm-hmm. him kicking in the side of the phone booth. Like, he was super, super pissed. And it's about Kim. And they know that we're starved for Kimformation.
I would hope so, yeah. They have to know that by now.
But I hope that they aren't trying to tease, like, he actually did speak to her.
I just can't see that reaction.
My fear is that, yeah, I don't see it either. Mm. My fear is that the payoff, it will happen, but it won't be great, maybe.
But they could have paid it off in the moment. I don't know why. It's like a double scene. Now, instead of just telling us what the call said, you now have to show us the call and we can't tell what they said, and then show us the scene again and let us see or shoot a new scene that adds context to it. It's like two scenes. It's like one scene for the price of two is the fucking problem. And that opportunity cost I talked about with dwindling time in the series makes me less tolerant of the one scene for two. I just, like, I don't want to pay that price. I don't, with the time we have left. So
it's very annoying.
Whereas, yeah, when you have a whole series ahead of you, it's not nearly as, it doesn't stick in my craw the same way.
Yeah. So then we have that big question mark still hanging over our heads, but it's even maybe a little bit bigger now because we know that the news that he got was not good in some way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what way. If it's just going to be that she was working a different job or something, that would be kind of shitty.
Well, it doesn't really build my anticipation. Maybe it does for some people, but for me, it's like, I didn't know anything about Kim's fate. Mm-hmm. I still don't know anything about Kim's fate. So I'm left in the same place. I just spent screen time to do it.
Yeah. And now Gene is feeling some feelings and he's going to start walking the dirty path again.
Sure. And that's the important, the secondary, like, important thing about it, right?
Yeah.
Is not, like, what's Kim's fate, but also what does this do to Gene? This turns him back into Saul, right?
Basically, yeah. I feel like by the end of this episode, he is closer to Saul than he has been in years.
Mm-hmm. He's actively working to get back to Saul.
He's actively. By the end of it, he has the freaking Bluetooth earpiece again.
Uh-huh.
He's not wearing the glasses as much. He already had the pinky ring from the last episode.
Yep.
He's running cons.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing his thing.
And he's...
Oh, and he's sleeping with people again.
Right. Like we saw him in the palace, the Roman palace.
Yeah.
Yes, that is all true.
Yeah. So After the scene, we follow Gene to work, where he stares at a stand mixer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of big, but not the biggest one I've seen. Not to brag. but I've seen one at least three times that size. I've stood next to one three times that size. I'm very cool.
Stand mixer connoisseur. Stand mixer snob here.
Kind of snob. Thank you very much. Snob-a-noor. Snob-a-sewer. No, none of this works. We follow Gene to work and then back to Marion's place, where he's decided to bring Jeff into another con because he's feeling feelings.
I do like seeing Jeffy's sour face when he sees Gene's car. Like, he's got such a good sour face.
He does have a good sour face.
People are disappointed that it's not the same actor, but this guy is very good also.
Yeah, he gives a different, we already talked about this, a different flavor to the character, but it's a flavor that I like and I think works for the character. Speaking of cats on Roombas, that's why we were talking about it.
Yep.
Because Carol Burnett is fascinated by Roomba cats.
Nice.
For good reason.
Wait, this is the ice cream cat. It's the ice cream licking cat.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, later, she's watching the cat on the Roomba, I think, in her bedroom later on.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, the late night
emergency
meeting. Sure, that makes sense. There's some cookie tins on the table in the kitchen. I know those cookie tins are a lie.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Every child of a crafty mother knows that those cookie tins are a lie. If you see a Royal Dansk tin, that blue tin, anywhere in the house, no cookies. It's going to be sewing shit. It's going
to
be needles.
What happens to the cookies?
And thread. They get eaten.
So they did at one time.
At one time, yes, they had cookies, but never again.
See,
and that time was years ago.
I find that people who have those tins also tend to have cookie jars. And so I bet the cookies just get dumped into the cookie jar and immediately converted to sewing needle tins.
Oh, clever.
Sewing supplies.
Need a lot of counter space for a cookie jar.
Well,
she needs an island.
Have counter space.
Her kitchen upsets me every time I see it.
I mean, it's a hideous kitchen. It desperately needs to be updated.
It's deeply out of date. Yeah, the counters still have that metal rim along the side. Mm-hmm. Oof. Rough.
To the point where I look at that and I go, how did they find this location? Did they build this set? Because it seems too perfectly stuck in time to actually be a real functional home.
It's like stuck in the, I don't even know what era that it's stuck in. Is it the 70s or is it earlier than that?
To me, it feels like 60s.
Yeah,
but
okay.
I'm not certain. Like, I know that I've been in houses like this, especially when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally.
When I was growing up in the 80s, I think pretty much every kitchen still kind of looked like this unless you were, you know, a wealthy family.
Yeah, totally.
Redid their kitchen every 5 years or whatever.
Yep. You got laminate countertops.
Mm-hmm.
You got linoleum floors.
Metal edges to your countertops.
Metal
you got
edges.
The stupid spindly dividers.
Yeah.
Yeah. like it's a stair railing. I don't know. It's terrible.
Yes, yes. Wallpaper. It's all bad. Sorry. I don't mean to. if anybody likes that style, like, more power to you. I think that style can be done well. It is not done well in this kitchen.
Hmm. The hilarious thing is, I look at her dining room set, and, or in this case, kitchen table. And those chairs around the table, they're so hideous.
Yeah.
But it's all in black and white. But I know for a fact that those chairs are yellow and green.
I think you're right.
100% those chairs are yellow and green. Yeah. They're disgusting.
Probably have pink flowers on them too.
Oh.
Yeah. Yellow, green, and pink. The best colors together.
I can almost taste those chairs. It's disgusting. Like, it comes through the black and white a little too well.
Oh, you know what? With the fabric sitting right there, that has absorbed every cooking smell, every bit of grease. Oh, my God. I'm starting to actually kind of yucked now.
Yeah.
I got to move on.
Sorry.
The con is on with Jeff again because he's got the sads. I don't know. He's got the angries.
Mm-hmm.
So, next scene. We get a little bit insight into what this might be. We cut to a bar where Gene is doing some karaoke, is how I'm going to say
generous.
That. It's very generous. We learn he's been playing bar games with a blowhard. Cabby Jeff shows up and the con is on.
I love this actor.
He's very good.
This guy is fantastic.
He's very good at playing a douchebag.
Whatever he's doing there, his douchebag ways. And I'm looking at him and I'm going, man, he looks familiar.
So familiar. Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying his performance. And I look him up and I see, he's in the movie Nebraska, which has connections to Better Call Saul stuff or Breaking Bad stuff, maybe. I don't know. We talked about this movie a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
I want to say maybe Robert Forster's in that movie, but this guy is also in that movie. And obviously we're in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
The more interesting fact here, and you might have recognized him, although nobody wrote in about it, is this is Kevin McAllister's older brother from Home Alone.
It's Buzz.
Buzz, yeah.
Can you believe it? As soon as Jim said this to me earlier, it just like blew my mind.
Yes.
Like, yes, that's totally him. And of course he can play a dickhead.
Of course.
Of course.
Because he plays a huge one. I'm surprised he didn't rub any boogers on Gene.
No wet willies, no tarantulas, nothing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Ugh, I'm gonna watch Home Alone again.
Yeah.
Fun movies. So Gene is calling himself Victor again.
Right, which should be an indication of
what
mode he's in.
Yep. This is where we see this device of his, this booze gathering device, so that he doesn't have to get drunk.
Yeah, my disappointment came though when he walked outside and just poured it on the ground. I'm like, you paid some good money for those drinks. Why not just, I mean, look, you're drinking Rusty Nails. It's not exactly the highest class beverage.
Yeah, but does it, the inside of a hot water bottle, that can't taste good, right? That's like the rubberiest of rubbers. Right?
Yeah, wrong.
It's got to be like licking a tire.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
I was thinking, well, isn't that just what a Long Island iced tea is? Is just a
licking
slurry
a tire?
Of
Sir.
Booze. But yeah, there's no rubber in a Long Island.
No.
Okay,
you're going
right.
To the wrong bars if they're putting a strip of rubber in your LIT, sir.
Fair. It's like those lube places that turn into restaurants. Just turn one of those lube places into a bar and just use the lube as ingredients and the rubber from the tires.
Oh, good. Yeah, good. Poison people. Yeah. Solid business strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The con. So the con is they get people fucked up, knock them out. And then they sneak into their house and they steal all their documents, basically, or photograph.
Yeah.
They steal the images of all their documents. Yeah. They steal their identities to sell them later on, is what we learn.
Yeah. And this entire time I'm thinking, okay, I get a handle on what they're doing here. You know, they're going to get them drunk, get them blasted on barbiturates, knock them out, steal their stuff. And then it changed because they were stealing identities. I'm like, oh, they're going to steal and use these identities. And then I see they're taking photos of the guy's trading accounts and bank accounts and investment stuff. And I'm like, oh, they're going big on this. They're
going to
take millions from this person in one shot. And then it turns out they're selling it for like $20,000.
Which is probably, it's the much safer way to go.
Absolutely.
Because what are they going to do with all that information?
Sure. It's probably less of a paper trail to them. Just fence it, let them deal with it.
Yeah.
So I did like the evolving nature of this, right? I think I've got a handle on it and it changes and then it changes again. And I finally, but at every step of the way, I'm understanding what they're going for.
Yeah. It was fun to see once, for sure. It was fun to see once. That's what I'll say about that.
And I mean, the thing is here, like once you start to see how far they're going, because like, are we talking about the montage here?
No, I mean, not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Yeah, that's a bit later. It's like three scenes away, but
Yeah, then I guess, you know, I didn't know if this was a one-time thing or if this was going to be done over and over again, because you don't get that information about them selling the identities until
much
the
later
montage.
On. Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I dropped that a little early, but I was with you. I could tell that it was going to be an identity theft kind of situation, but I did not realize that they were going to be selling it to a third party, which makes so much more sense.
One of the things I love here is this is like a weird role reversal for Jimmy. Like, he's used to being the guy who's doing the coin tricks, who's, you know, betting the people they can't do this thing, or like lighting the people's hands on fire, whatever. He used to be that guy. Now he's letting them do it to him in like a weird role reversal that's going to lead to them getting scammed. He's always very smart with the way he does this stuff.
He is. I can imagine the delight in the back of his mind as he is letting this guy get away with every trick that he already knows. And he already knows probably 30 more tricks at least. Yeah. He's just like, yep. Oh, yeah. I'm a dumbass. I'm a little guy.
Yeah. Probably thinking, oh, you could have taken me for more if you did it this way.
Exactly. Like, he's like critiquing the way that he's doing the mini cons. Yeah.
Totally.
Scams, I should say. Yeah.
I almost wish they would have expressed that, right? You could do that with Bob Odenkirk because he's very good. You could have him just give like a little look at a thing he's doing and like a sour, kind of sour face.
A judgmental face. Yeah. At the technique, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That there could have been a throwaway.
A little eye roll, a little like something there, but they don't go for that. That's interesting.
They don't. They really, really focus on the booze sucker.
Yeah.
Like many times throughout this episode, they keep cutting back to that. Like, okay, cool. I get that it's a neat trick, but guys, come on.
Yeah.
But guys, come on. We got it. We got it in the first scene.
Got it. I know what they're doing.
When we saw that there was a tube in his glass, we got it. We didn't really even need to see anything
else.
Right.
I didn't need the
else.
Internal shot underneath
his
jacket
or whatever. I didn't even need to see
him
dumping it afterward.
Nope.
Like, why? Nope. I don't care what he does with it, really. It makes sense that he's dumping it, though.
Sure.
Rubber. Telling you. So after we get this little bit of con, we cut back in time to the Winnebago, where Saul has a chat with a couple of kingpin wannabes.
Yeah, this is early Breaking Bad.
Very early Breaking Bad. This is before things get bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when exactly is this? I'm trying to place this because
it's like episode 3.
So are they trying to get him to get Badger off the hook at this point? Is that what's happening?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess this is a little bit later on. It is, yeah.
Okay. And he won't take the job or something, so they drag him out to the desert and pay him to be their lawyer. I forget exactly how this goes.
It's Badger related for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, because he thought he was meeting with a different client, and then he met with Badger, public masturbator.
Met with a cop.
Huh?
Didn't Badger get arrested by a cop because he was trying to sell
he got arrested by freaking
skinny man.
Yeah, not Skinny Pete.
No.
That the one that always played nerds in early 2000s movies. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure,
so I am remembering correctly
the
part of the show that we're supposed to be at here.
Yes, for sure.
And obviously this is immediately after the line, right? The one that everybody's been talking about. How are they going to connect the dots to the Ignacio? It wasn't me. It was Ignacio. And mentioning Lalo. This is that scene continued.
Yeah, it is.
They're like literally stepping in through the door of the Winnebago out in the desert after that. Was this useful? Did this satisfy? Like, I guess I would ask the people who really wanted to connect the dots on the Ignacio line, the Lalo line. Did this satisfy you? Because, like, I was already satisfied.
I was already satisfied.
I did not need
too.
This, a continuation of this scene where, like, Walt asks about Lalo or Jesse asks about Lalo. Who is this Lalo guy?
Considering
it
the fact
add
that
anything
no,
to me.
Considering the fact that Saul doesn't even give them any information, he's just like, on second thought, never mind.
And you
so
get a moment of reflection
of
about Kim. I get that, but like he can't stop moving, right? He's got this. He's so impatient when he's sitting in this RV because if he stops and he gets in his own head, then he's going to think about Kim.
Yeah,
and his entire life has been built to not think about Kim. I get that. And this is a moment to sit with that for a second. But we've already done that. We've already sat with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what the scene with him and the breakfast bar was all about.
Yeah.
In his big-ass mansion. Like,
right.
I saw that. So I guess, like, this didn't really add anything to me. When combined, I guess, with the mic scene. But you could have just done the mic scene, honestly.
You could have just done the mic scene, but... And then you wouldn't have Walt and Jesse.
So, I know. Yeah. I didn't need Walt and Jesse, but it's fine.
It wasn't
a bad scene. It was just
no. It was definitely fell more in service to fan service.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little annoying, but I think you're right. Taken in context with all the other scenes of that era in this episode, shall I say?
Yeah.
It works. Mm-hmm. And I did enjoy seeing Jesse call Walt a dick again. That was pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, I love their dynamic. They
I like
seem
their
to
early,
slip right
early
back
on
into the
dynamic,
roles.
Sure.
Much yeah. better, much better. Yeah, I really love their, you know, gangster Jesse, gangster wannabe Jesse, really.
Yeah.
Dynamic and high school chemistry teacher dynamic.
And how they, early on, they are sliding back into those roles where Walter White is the teacher and Jesse is the willfully doesn't always want to work student. Mm-hmm. What do you call that? Willfully obtuse? I don't know.
Yeah, he just wants to eat Funyuns, man.
Yep, he just wants to do it fast and dirty. But Walt teaches him the right way.
Yeah, so that was fun. But
yeah,
ultimately it felt pretty superficial.
That was kind of superficial, but they promised it, and they delivered, so... Wee! So we transition from a dirt hole to Gene lying on his bed. That was a cool transition.
Yes,
then on the floor with his hip wiggler, or whatever it is.
Swing master, I believe, is what it's
master.
Called.
Swing master. Hip wiggler. A montage shows the crew running the scam many more times, and surprise, Gene sleeping with sex workers again.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's trying to drown out all that Kim annoyance that's cropping back up.
Yep. This is where we see that they're selling the stuff to a broker.
Yes. And that was a new wrinkle mm-hmm. during this montage. I like that. There's a couple things I like. We see him tossing burner phones to his partners in crime here.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're going to use those once per?
Probably not. Probably not.
I think Saul's a little more frugal than that, and he understands, like, the once per rule. Once per what? Once per day? Once per week? Once per call?
Yeah.
Doesn't really apply to him. He knows that's, like, he's just trying to sell people on buying more phones.
Obviously, yeah, yeah. And also, he's not as hot here in Nebraska as he was. He's not as under the scope here as he was in Albuquerque.
Totally. But yeah, I hope you like seeing what, that's the thing, the pieces all add up. It's mm-hmm. not a bad montage, all
it's
said.
It's not a bad montage, it's just, I don't know, it's more screen time.
More screen time that could have
been spent on something else, yeah. Could have given us, like, I don't know, actual information about anything that we care about. But sure, let's watch six more investor bro douchebags get scammed or whatever. 20
yeah,
more.
And then this all
more.
Leads out to a scene that I think is truly superfluous here.
Yeah.
Almost entirely. There's like one element that the scene brings, but let's talk about that scene.
Yep. So after this montage, we are back at a bar with Gene and a new, nicer Mark, who also happens to have cancer.
And that's the thing. The one thing that this scene tells us is that this guy is not a dick.
Yeah.
This guy is actually a nice guy. He just happens to be wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're supposed to feel extra sorry for him. But honestly, you give a guy cancer. You could have cut from the end of this montage straight to Buddy or whatever his name is, busting in the door saying, I'm not going to steal from a guy with cancer.
Or just
and
the
I
would have
gotten
call.
Everything.
We could have cut straight to the phone call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then he gets later on.
This scene feels unnecessary to me.
It is unnecessary. I like that actor a lot, but
I do too. Yeah,
seen him in a ton of stuff.
What'd you call him?
I called him Baby Giamatti.
Baby Giamatti.
Yeah.
He looks so much like Paul Giamatti.
Young Giamatti. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's the same age.
I know he's the same age. It's just like his face shape.
Baby face.
He's like a slightly Giamatti. Cuter Giamatti. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Less run down by the world.
So, I mean, I could have done without this. It does shade Saul as the bad guy here. Gene as the bad guy, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Why are you pushing
even
it
more
this
so
far?
Than stealing from a guy with cancer? You're stealing from a good man, apparently. Or at least
a decent person. A person who isn't treating you the same way that all these other guys have been treating you, which is to say with open contempt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disdain.
He offers Gene the taxi first.
Yeah.
He offers him, you know, waffling, but that's kind of the best advice on the stock market is you can't give people advice on the stock market unless you have insider trading information.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm torn on this scene because it does do that and it makes him more of a bad guy, but I kind of already felt like he was in that mode when he went overboard later in the episode.
I mean, honestly, when he started all this, like there's only, I don't know, how many of those guys were actually bad people, right? And how do you know that from 30 minutes of interaction with them or an hour, whatever?
Yeah, and this is not a letting Jane die moment, right?
No.
This isn't so big that like you really need to shade the lines here, but like it's less than that. I don't know.
The more I'm sitting here thinking about it as we're talking, I definitely see the usefulness of this scene because it does show that Gene is not really, he's not scamming the same way that he used to, because he could stop here. He could just skip over this one. He could literally just skip over it, but he refuses to. And at the end of the episode, he is literally leaving evidence.
Yeah.
By breaking a window.
Mm-hmm.
To get into this guy's house after the other one doesn't want to do it, but we'll get to that. Right after this scene, we get another, I was going to say backflash, that's not what that's called. We cut back in time to Saul's old office, where Mike's checking in with the juicy deets on Walt and Jesse.
Yep, Mike still over his bullshit.
Openly contemptuous, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
It's pretty good. And, you know, I talked about how this scene really does a lot to color my feelings on behind the scenes in Breaking Bad and the stuff that led, you know, into Breaking Bad and perpetuated through Breaking Bad.
Mike is literally telling him this is a bad, probably not a great couple to get involved with.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just leave it alone, but he can't.
Right.
Because he sees dollar signs.
And it shows you that Mike was aware of that right from the beginning. It wasn't even like, he worked with Walt for a while and then found out he was a bad egg. And
Mike always hated Walt from like the first time he met him because of his attitude.
Yeah.
You could tell that dude was not going to let anybody boss him around for better or worse.
And, you know, it's so like, it's so petty the way that all of them died, right? Because it begins with Saul pushing to get a piece of Walt's action is what it is. Like, he just wants to get a cut of the money.
Yeah, he wants to make what they've already got bigger so he can get a juicy chunk.
Yeah
he's all about money and at that era of his life,
right? Trying to heal the wound of that Kim left him with.
Mm-hmm.
With money, and it's not going to work.
Kim and Chuck and everybody.
Sure.
Howard.
Yeah.
All the ghosts in his life trying to silence him with money. And I don't think that works. All right. We're going to go forward in time again. And we are back with Gene getting a call at home. He rushes over to Jeffy's for a late night emergency meeting with the crew.
Yeah. Here's the cat on a Roomba.
Here is the cat on a Roomba. Yeah. And a barking dog, which is how Carol Burnett knows that there's something happening outside.
I've seen some interesting theories about this, which are kind of exciting. And we'll talk about them in feedback. But yeah, the line from last week's teaser at the end was in this. Mm-hmm. You were right. It was actually Gene saying, okay. It was not Kim.
I know.
How could you tell it sounded so much like Kim?
I have good ear. I have good ear, man.
All right.
I have what? Two good ears.
That's the problem. I have one.
Yeah.
I have one ear.
Unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. There are two Frankenstein references in this episode. And I want to say Frankenstein was also a thing in Breaking Bad. There was like a Frankenstein reference. It's been like a decade since we talked about that show, but yeah, he says you walk like Frankenstein got probed by aliens.
Yeah. No, that's back in the scene at Saul's old office. He's talking with Mike.
Uh-huh. Sorry. And then earlier in the episode when Walt and Jesse were on screen, he called Jesse Igor, which is obviously a reference to Dr. Frankenstein's sidekick.
His lab assistant, yeah.
Also, I'm pretty sure it's intentional, but he fucks up the Frankenstein reference here, right? Like, Dr. Frankenstein didn't have a problem with his walk.
It's true. Yeah.
And Frankenstein wasn't the name. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
It's classic.
Oh, yeah. It's Frankenstein's monster, not Frankenstein. Do we get that? Is that been established?
Uh-huh. I think it's been established in the last 20 years of people talking about it.
Yeah. People being obnoxious about it.
Why two?
Totally.
Why two references to Frankenstein?
I don't know.
Had Frankenstein on the brain. They had monster brain in the writer's room that week.
Had monster brain. They're right, though. He does walk like Frankenstein post alien probing or
yes.
Whatever he said it was. Okay. So the thing here is that Buddy does not want to rip off a nice man with cancer.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame him, especially when he drops the fact that they were the same drugs his dad took. That's
rough.
Fuck you, Gene.
Yeah.
You're asking a dude whose dad died of cancer to go scam a guy who's dying of cancer.
And you're going to actually berate him when he says, no, I don't want to do this. You're going to call him all kinds of names and tell him that he sucks, that he's an amateur. When he is the one, he's actually been the most competent one this whole time.
Yeah.
He's the only one who hasn't fucked up in any way so far.
If Buddy wasn't such a nice guy, an apparently nice guy, I'm surprised he didn't get punched, honestly, because that's just beyond the pale.
Yeah, that's pretty shitty. So good on him for walking out. And probably he's going to save himself some heartache legally.
Yeah.
Based on maybe a little bit of the teaser that we saw.
It depends on whether Jeffy can keep his mouth shut. I don't know.
I don't know that that's actually going to be a factor.
He looks like a squealer.
I don't know. I'm worried
Not
about
a factor?
This. I'm worried about this cancer guy. I feel like they're going to get caught red-handed in some
I know,
way.
But... then, like, who are your accomplices? And the cops pressure Jeffy.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Buddy gets.
Oh yeah, if the cops pressure Jeffy, there's no way he's keeping his mouth shut. Right? He looks like a squealer. That's the face of a squealer.
Oh yeah.
I can call him. I see him. But. Gene and Jeffy, or Gene convinces, I'm calling him Jeffy now. Gene convinces Jeff to go back to the house with him, even though it's been like hours already.
Yeah, he says it's been 3 hours. They don't even know if he's still passed out.
The tape on the lock has been removed.
So he's going to have to actually break in now. And he does. He smashes the window.
He does. Loud and messy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is super sloppy.
It's super sloppy. And that's like, this is. So would you get caught? Is would one of your you or somebody you know get sloppy? That's what happened last time.
And you have to ask why. Like I know, Saul is good. Jimmy is good at thinking on his feet and getting himself out of pickles on the fly.
Yeah, he's
he's creating this mess.
He is like, creating it,
and he creates messes too. But usually, he doesn't create a mess within a scam, and then. Get out scot-free and then decide to go back in to potentially risk a bad situation.
Yeah. And when he does get in a mess, it's usually not in a way that...
It's usually something he couldn't have gotten out of, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, something went away that I didn't expect, but I'm already in it. So I got to keep pushing
through
it. So you
gotta improvise, yeah.
This is not that. This is very different.
Yeah, this is him just pushing ahead with something that's already started to go sour.
Yeah, and it's a foolish plan.
It's weird. It's weird for him to do. He's slipping.
And, right.
And not
so
the right way.
That's the question is why?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Why indeed? So for some reason, we're going to cut back away from this thing that's actively happening to the past again. And we're going to watch Saul roll up on Walt's high school where he teaches.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to cut back to this, which is Gene showing up at Cancer Guy's house, breaking the window, unlocking the door. End of episode.
This is just connecting a dot for Breaking Bad audiences, right? Is all that Saul walking into Walt's high school is?
I guess so. I mean,
But is it a dot that I needed to connect?
I don't know. If you've seen this show, like, you already know what the next scene is. You know that he walks into Walt's... into Walt's class. It's empty, luckily. And Walt's like, what the hell are you doing here?
Right.
And he's like, I want you to work with me, basically.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the point of showing this is at all. Other than just connecting dots that don't really...
Yeah, tying up a loose end that I didn't even see was there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can guess a lot of this stuff, but whatever. It's 5 seconds out of an episode.
Yeah, no, it's the least egregious of these instances in this episode.
Yeah.
For sure. But that is the end of the episode.
And you get that teaser, right, where the police show up somewhere. Probably the house Gene broke into. I don't think it's...
Probably. Is he still going to be there? Probably not. But what else will be happening? My theory, Cancer Guy dead. He did.
Bad interactions with booze, cancer medication, and barbiturates.
And barbiturates. Yeah. It chemical cocktail. You were asking for heartache, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's my prediction, but I'm always predicting that somebody's going to die. So take that with a grain of barbiturate.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on a series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more.
However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, well, that is, as you said, the end of the episode. Why don't we get into some feedback? Got a few pieces here. I'm not going to consider, we are very short on time tonight, running very long. I'm not going to consider feedback from last episode, so I apologize to anybody who wrote in after we recorded our podcast last week, but we got plenty to talk about this week. So we're going to start there. And we'll start with Rob, who says, while we can speculate on his fate, I couldn't help but wonder if the red suit, he's talking about the one on the poster, or the
promo
key art for this season, indicated that Saul would die a bloody death, comparing it to Walter White's demise and the fact that innocent people such as Howard went down because of him. He may need to pay for his deeds in the end. In the beginning of the show, we knew he couldn't die because of plot armor, so he had to live for Breaking Bad. Now it appears it's mostly post-Breaking Bad left, and I feel like all bets are off and the blood red suit could be foreshadowing. What do you think?
Yeah, could be. Could be a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, man. There was so much talk of color theory in Breaking Bad, and like I said, it's been practically a decade since I've really talked about that show.
Yeah.
I don't remember
really doing as much color theory stuff in Better Call Saul. I think they got that.
I agree.
People can see it from a mile away. It makes it less fun.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's move on to Riley. Says, so in my mind, this episode cemented this show as being a tragedy about an addict who went too far, rather than a show about a likable anti-hero who eventually realizes the error of his ways. I feel that it will only end in tragedy for Gene entering the house, most likely resulting in a prison sentence. With that, assuming that a tragic ending is in store, which seems pretty hard to avoid at this point, would it feel at all incongruent with or for Jimmy McGill to end up with a more depressing fate than Walter White got? Not that Walt's story wasn't a complete tragedy, but Gene dying or being convicted in Nebraska completely alone, kinless, friendless, penniless, after his meth money gets confiscated, and with no greater goal ever being achieved, seems quite more bleak to me than Walt getting Walt Jr. millions, being the savior by freeing Jesse, and at the very least, a moment of closure with Skyler. Even at this point in the story, Jimmy is, to me, a more redeemable person than Walt for most of Breaking Bad. What would a sad ending for Gene say about the final message of the Albuquerque saga looking back at these shows? Got any opinions on that?
It's an interesting point. That would be a lot grimmer. Because it did always rub me the wrong way is maybe too strong a wording, but I did think that Walt got far too many good things at the end. I mean, he died surrounded by what he realized he loved, which was
the crystal blue persuasion.
Basically, all that meth equipment, he's surrounded by it, and then he dies there.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Because that, he gets that little moment of closure with Skyler. He gets to free Jesse, like you said. Yeah, he gets to go out kind of like a desperado.
And sure.
It's always sucked to me because he ruined so many people's lives and he got so many people killed, innocent and otherwise. Like Andrea just getting blasted in the head in her front yard for no reason other than the fact that she was with Jesse for a while.
Yeah.
And that's all Walter.
Yeah.
So that would suck. That would suck to me because I agree that maybe at least deep down, way deep down, Saul is a better person than
I think
Walt.
There is a lot more goodness in, similar to the way Jesse is, there's a lot more goodness in Jimmy than there ever was in Walt.
I feel like he can see other people in a way that Walter was never able to. He was always up his own ass from day one.
I mean, he's a man who's full of pride and driven by ego and ambition.
Stature. And he got pushed out of that gray matter thing, and he was butthurt about it every day since that, after that.
Because he's always been like that, right?
Yeah.
He's always wanted to feel like the smartest guy in the room,
exactly.
the most looked up to, the biggest man on campus.
Yep.
And to me, you know, that's a worse character flaw than what Jimmy is, which is a pleaser. Jimmy wants to please people. He wants to be liked.
Yeah. He's constantly seeking validation, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He makes mistakes. That's the thing. I feel like for the most part, and I know there are choices he's made, but Jimmy makes mistakes, whereas Walter White made choices.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to forgive mistakes much quicker than I am conscious choices to be evil.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's where you get to. And, you know, the fact that, like Riley's saying here, they are doing a sort of, you know, unjust reversal here, where, like, the guy who I view as a worse guy is getting off easier than the guy who I think deserves more to get a happy ending.
At the very least, the guy who has struggled with his morality a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
He actually gave a shit about that at some point.
Yeah, I feel like the last time Walt really struggled with morality was maybe Jane's death, but like Crazy Eight, honestly.
Yeah.
Like episode one? Is that episode one?
That's like episode one, man.
Or two?
Or two.
I think that's the last time he really grappled with it.
Yeah. And then it was just...
And then Jane was like another bump in the road to becoming, you know, Scarface. But yeah, you're right. It's not just, but it feels deliciously unjust. I don't know. I don't dislike it.
Yeah, no, they're definitely the last bit of this, the last half of this whole season really has felt like a train to tragedy.
Yeah.
Faux show.
Absolutely. All right, Alex C. says, couldn't help but think after that Mike scene, it seems like where we leave Mike in Better Call Saul, he's already established as the head of Gus's security and his rapidly booming enterprise. Why would he still work for Saul? Is Gus not paying him enough? Isn't he disgusted by Jimmy's transformation into Saul? How does he even have time? I don't know. I think Mike might be checking this guy out for Gus. It's like Saul's bringing Gus a client, right? Mm-hmm. Saul's bringing Gus a connection through Mike. And Mike's job here was, you know, to check the guy out for Gus, and he determined he's small potatoes and didn't want him.
Yeah.
So I think he might actually be working for Gus.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way that this all kind of gets started as far as Gus and Mike goes is that one of their dealers gets a hold of the blue stuff and they test it, and the purity of it, it like blows Gale's hair back, and that's his main chemist. And he's like, I've got to meet this man. I've got to meet this, you know, shining god of chemistry, which is basically how he treats Walter.
And Gale pretty much convinces Gus to go with Walt
because his stuff is like 0.3%
better or whatever.
It's like 2% like better. Yeah, it's negligible,
right.
Let's say.
And
definitely not worth the fucking trouble.
His own death warrant by doing so is the tragic part of it.
Yes. It's like you don't even know what you're getting into, man. Oh, this guy's ego. It's terrible. Yeah. But that's how that gets started. So yes, it makes sense to me that Gus has sent Mike out to.
Yeah. So this is really Mike working for Gus, not necessarily for Saul.
Working for Gus with Saul.
Right. Makes sense. Also, Alex says, a lot of people are assuming Gene was talking to Kim on the phone. I think Gene was being told Kim isn't there anymore, and they have no idea where she went. Gene is furious because now he has no way of finding her. I think I agree. I think that's the way that went.
It's the way I'm leaning to. I mentioned the death thing, but only because it is a possibility.
Mm-hmm. And then the theory, he's going to be arrested for breaking and entering, held in an Omaha jail. And then Kim will see his photo on the news and come visit him because she's back in her home state. We'll see.
Yeah.
She left Florida altogether. Maybe.
Why was she even in Florida in the first place? Maybe we'll find that out. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
Good question.
It's her mother down there.
She went on spring break and never left. All right. Brad says, last episode of Better Call Saul was pretty epic. He's talking about this one. Mm-hmm. A rather seamless weaving of the lives of Saul and Jimmy and Gene, and how each of these men continue a devastating pattern of self-destruction. The one flaw in this episode is Jeffy. Why would they recast the character and then portray him so differently? This version seems hapless and anxious as opposed to vaguely menacing. And then it occurred to me, by paralleling these two scenes, did Peter Gould decide to play them as two versions of one character on purpose? Obviously, the recasting was accidental. However, it almost seems like they leaned into the idea that in Gene's paranoia, he identified this guy as menacing and threatening when really he was just a fan of Saul Goodman and his commercials. Then when we see Gene actually meet the man, we see the real Jeffy, who's just a normal guy who never showed any type of menace to Gene.
Mm-hmm.
The full-length Gene episodes, we see the real situation and not the haze of fear like the last several Gene segments. I kind of like that. I'm not sure if that's actually what they were going for, but it's a good way to smooth that over.
Sure.
The loss of that actor.
Yeah. I've thought about it too. I wonder if that actor would have done as convincing a job of being like generally sweaty and anxious like this Jeff is.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's got
another
gear. Because
Jeff is really selling the anxious part.
And there's something about that other actor's face that looks more menacing.
It does. It's a little more... Sorry, man. A little more thuggish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A bit. I mean, look, you need all types in Hollywood. You got a great face for Hollywood. I look at you and I feel something, right? As opposed to Giamatti,
totally.
Where I look at him and feel nothing.
Oh, I... No.
I feel sad.
I feel sympathy, yes, when I see that. I'm sorry. And hey, that's like what all of his roles are, right? Is he's slightly...
It's true. Yeah.
Slightly down on his luck.
Yeah.
And that's what I
And you
like want to
see him get back to good.
Yeah.
Also, Brad has a prediction here. His prediction is for the next two episodes, Bill Oakley will be Saul's attorney when he gets arrested for this final scheme gone wrong.
Why? Why would he come all the way to Nebraska?
I don't know. Maybe he calls him up. I want to see Bill Oakley's commercial. That's what I want to see.
Oh, do you think he has a good... string of commercials?
He has to. I mean, he has always envied Saul Goodman or Jimmy, right? Like,
yeah.
Until the part where he gets busted, you know, and he's like,
obviously
laughing at him. But
yeah, of course. But before that, yeah, when he had the corporate lawyer jobs or whatever, just the fact that he was working with
God, he just wanted to be in the same bathroom to sniff his farts.
He wanted that company car.
Uh-huh.
The company car, the company apartment, all of it.
Yeah.
The
and
company
once
coffee.
He lost all that, he was there to rub it in his face. For sure, he's copying Saul.
I need to see that. I think you're right. I do need to see that. Now that you've introduced that possibility to my mind, yes.
Right?
What?
Even if it's
yes.
just like an Easter egg video on YouTube or whatever.
I'll take
God, it. God, I want to see that. Because they film those all the time.
They do, yeah.
Post a social media thing for the final episode.
That would make me so happy.
Yeah. The prediction goes on here. I suspect Kim has killed herself or died tragically due to an overdose or a health condition based
Holy
on Jimmy's
cow.
Reaction. I don't think he would react that way to Kim telling him not to bother her or to an employee saying that she wouldn't take his call. What turns him into leaning full Saul like that and being that overtly self-destructed has to be Kim's death.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think it could also be the loss of his lead.
Yeah.
His final connection to Kim severed.
It is true. We have no idea how she has managed to deal with the trauma of what happened all these years.
Yeah.
It doesn't usually leave people unmarked.
Very true. Okay, Omar says, I hate to say it or be this guy, and this is one of those emails, but I was not a fan of this episode. Look, you're not being that guy by saying you're not a fan of an episode.
You're being one of the many guys.
Many. I think the predominant feeling on this episode is meh.
Meh is a very good description. Yeah.
Omar says, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed watching it, and I guess that's all that matters. The thing is, I look at these episodes to give more context to the characters and the Better Call Saul storyline, and the only thing that would have done that was the Kim phone call, and we didn't get to hear it.
Yeah, right?
Though we can guess the tone and how it went. Remember in the beginning we said we wanted the Breaking Bad cameos, but not just as fan service? I gotta say, these scenes added nothing to either show's overall story. Again, still a fun watch, and I still love this show. Just thought story-wise, this was one of the weaker episodes. Yeah, I mean, I largely agree with the sentiment. Mm-hmm. I think I wouldn't say those scenes add nothing. I think they add something, but isn't it essential when we have three episodes left? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
two
for each
at this point.
Person to judge for themselves.
Two more, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay. Let's move on to Scott, who also says, maybe this is a contrary take.
It's not. It's but not, I promise.
I didn't love this episode. I just didn't get much out of the Walt Jesse scenes. None of those imparted new information. I had previously filled in all the gaps and they did in my head. It was fine, fun seeing them, and I know the creators felt they had to work Walt and Jesse in, so the fans didn't storm their houses with torches and pitchforks. Another Frankenstein reference.
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't move the needle for me. I have 60-plus episodes of the Walt and Jesse story if I want to watch it. But that's me. It was fine. Better than most stuff on TV, but with three episodes left, I wanted more.
Yeah, totally. I'll say this. I liked this cameo better than the Hank and Gomez cameo. I feel like it gave more to the series. Hank and Gomez was literally just a throwaway thing.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how that went. They were chasing down Gus's
Nacho
drops.
Yeah. No, I guess not Nacho specifically, but yeah, Gus's drops. It didn't, right. But it never actually went anywhere. It never went anywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was literally just fan service, not to this fan, because I never really liked at least one of those characters all that much.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Sorry, I don't like Hank.
I know. It's Hank's a lot.
He's not very likable
at the beginning.
Yeah, he's the kind of person who, like, in a house party kind of situation would just make me feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, he dominates the room. And,
yeah.
But, yeah, I thought he was a good character.
He's a good character, for sure. He made sense in the story. I just didn't like him.
Yeah. Scott continues with some thoughts. He says, I think Marion is going to bust Saul. She's now clearly suspicious and realizes Gene is probably up to no good. She also has the internet to find all the dirt on Saul.
Oh, yeah, computer, right.
When Jimmy asked for more dirt from Francesca, she retorts, don't they have internet where you are? They do. And we see a character played by the most famous actor in either Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul prominently using it. This is a theory I love because, do you think Saul's commercials are online? Because she could very easily search up,
run
across with an algorithm, stumble on a Better Call Saul video and be like, that's the guy in my garage. And then search Saul Goodman, and then all of the news articles pop up, right? About Walt and the drugs and the deaths and...
Sure, that... I will say that feels a little flimsy to me. I'm not so sure about that one, because a lot of stuff would have to line up. Many stars would have to align for her to come across his stuff.
I mean, nowadays it would just pop up with an algorithm, right? I'd go to my homepage on YouTube and then, oops, there is a video that YouTube wants to show me for some reason.
Yeah, sure. But why would it be a shiesty lawyer from Albuquerque? From 5 years
maybe
ago.
Maybe because all of his, it's been a while.
It's a completely different name, completely different state. That stuff does pop up, but it's usually a little more. Most of her pop-ups are probably going to be cat videos.
Yeah, at this point. Maybe some cockatiels poking people's eyes out.
Probably a little bit of white supremacy, because you can't get away from that stuff no matter what you search. Because the internet's a
this
trash
This cat
hole.
Is a white supremacist. What?
One weird trick to show that your cat is a white supremacist.
He continues here. Holy cow, it's Stewart from The Big Bang Theory. I guess that's the guy with cancer is from The Big Bang Theory. I don't watch that show.
I don't watch the show either.
And he's dying of cancer. And Jimmy is going to break in his house and try to take his last dime so he never has a chance to get his identity back or rebuild what Jimmy took from him. Kind of like what he did to Howard, except he knows on the front end that that's what he's doing.
Hmm.
Yes. Yes, he's doing a very bad thing and he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the nod to the dashboard light that causes the battery to die one episode later in Four Days Out in Breaking Bad. Yep.
Yeah.
And that that grave that they dug for Saul was a good transition. It says, interesting that Oakley stays with the DA for 6 years after we last see him, then switches sides right after Saul goes on the lam. Maybe Oakley saw an opening in the market for a criminal lawyer.
Probably, yeah.
A man can only eat so many Frito bags for lunch before he snaps. Yeah, maybe that's the thing, too. Someone needed to fill that void.
That makes sense to me. I like that as a theory.
All right, Norm says, what a dirtbag Gene is, and how great are these writers? How many people thought Jeff would be the one to reinitiate the scamming? I thought Jeff was the danger. Jimmy is the one who knocks. Just yeah. Brilliant. That said, there's no way he's going to have a happy ending. It might even go worse, considering he's breaking and entering to end the last episode. Does Gene kill the cancer mark, or do we flash forward to Marion confronting him and she's getting offed? Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
Wow.
Just straight up murder.
Jeez.
Does he try and scam his way out of that before he would just murder her? But maybe.
Probably would. Seems more his speed, but I don't know. I guess it depends on what news he got from that fucking phone call that we didn't get to hear.
Right. Either way, the flash forwards and back confirmed to me that Saul does not deserve any redemption. I hope that Kim hasn't become as reprehensible on her own. Maybe that's all the redemption we deserve. Glad this is ending soon because I couldn't watch this disgusting person much longer. So you're taking the tack that Jimmy's no better than Walt. Is it because he keeps getting back into the game when he knows he should get out? Similar to Walt? I can see that argument.
Yeah, but it feels different. It feels different with Jimmy / Gene than it does with Walt because it feels more like I liked whoever mentioned it earlier in the feedback, like an addiction.
Yes.
Like this could be, that could be a little bit that addicted to easy money.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely addicted to the life.
Getting one over on
the scamming life. And I think also, like, he's driven by tragedy, right? He's a tragic character.
He is a tragic character.
I don't think Walt is a tragic character. I think Walt is a hubristic character.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, if I were more familiar with Shakespeare, I'm sure there are any number of Shakespearean characters and memes I could pull here. But like
Jesse's the tragic character in Breaking Bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Jimmy is
and
the
Skyler,
Jesse of this
honestly.
Series.
Skyler too.
Yeah. So I don't share the opinion that he does not deserve any redemption. I think I'm sympathetic toward a tragic character.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they've gotten themselves back into the situation multiple times when they had an out. I still remain sympathetic.
Yep, me too. Does he deserve a happy ending? I don't know.
But he at least deserves
a satisfying ending in some way.
All right, let's move on to Josh, who says, perhaps I was naive, but I always thought of Gene as closer to Jimmy than to Saul. I guess I hope that going through the events of Breaking Bad softened him a bit. Nope. As soon as he finds out he's broke, he goes immediately into Saul mode, scamming dudes whose only crimes are being wealthy, being single, and being friendly, with maybe the exception of Buzz. Oh, so Josh did recognize Buzz.
Hey,
all right.
Good job.
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody just like straight up pointed out. Here's the thing, though. I don't think he goes scamming because he's broke. I think he goes scamming because this news with Kim, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
sent him, you know, off the wagon, essentially.
Two parts. It can be both. It can definitely be both.
Yeah.
Realizing that he has no more assets other than literally what he has stashed at home.
Yeah, I mean, the money's nice, but he's got all those diamonds. He's got, like...
Yeah, also, like, what's he doing with the money?
And diamonds.
Literally nothing. Paying for sex workers, that's it.
Right. I don't know. I mean, and the question becomes, to what end, right? Is this just the compulsion to do it and he's stacking cash for no other reason than he's compelled and stacking cash?
Or is he going to go on a Kim quest?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he trying to build a stash to give to her? Did he get some bad news about, like, yeah, she got fired and she's homeless and toothless now, and he wants to, like, make good on, like, maybe his chair of the part of the Sandpiper settlement that he was supposed to give to her that he never had an opportunity to give to her?
Maybe.
I don't know. We'll probably find out all those answers in the next couple episodes.
I hope so. God, I hope so.
Yeah. We've talked about the redemption stuff, Josh, yeah. So sorry about that. Dan says, did anybody else get the distinct feeling that the cancer grift target from the bar was a federal agent working Gene? I don't know why, but I got those vibes immediately. My first thought was that Kim had told the bureau that Jimmy had called. They traced the call back to the phone booth and are on to Gene. However, why the pretense? Surely they just arrest him straight off the bat. I think both of those points could be still accurate if they are unrelated. Yeah, it's possible.
It's an interesting theory.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the cops are definitely showing up somewhere next episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Joseph says, anybody think maybe Saul's dedication to get the last mark's info was meant for just monetary theft, but maybe actual identity theft? Like, he's dying of cancer. Wouldn't be a bad step for Saul to start creating a whole new life for him in some other town when he passes Saul, or when the guy with cancer passes, Saul can step into it, like Andy Dufresne did the warden from Shawshank. I suppose that's possible.
I suppose it's possible. It seems somewhat unlikely, but...
He doesn't seem like a man who's calculating to any point at that time, right? Yeah. It's like he's driven by anger, not desire to start a new life, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to move on to a new life. I think he wants to settle shit.
Yeah. All right, Rinaldi says, throughout Better Call Saul, one theme has persisted these six seasons with the most consistency, in my opinion. You're either a sheep or a wolf. And season 4 shows Jimmy adopting this wolf and sheep mentality more frequently after Chuck's legacy becomes an obstacle to Jimmy's chances of being reinstated as a lawyer. He adopts the Saul identity, seemingly as a middle finger to Chuck's memory, as a way to cement the sheep or wolf philosophy. Season 5, episode 7, Kim is infuriated that Jimmy made her the sucker, and Jimmy is oblivious to Kim's fury at this action. Kim expected to be a part of the con, but she was forced to play spectator instead. Jimmy did this despite Kim proving to be a capable con artist and clever planner in her own right. Still, Jimmy used her as a prop. Do you think fans feel like Kim did in that episode during these past two episodes, 6:10 Nippy and 6:11 Breaking Bad, where they expect to be a part of Jimmy's story, but instead they're being used as a prop to tell a different and more unexpected story? Well, I'm going to have to read this praise because it's part of the email. Baldmove has done a fantastic job breaking down Better Call Saul and giving both constructive criticism and high praise for the show, with great humor as well, and looking damn good, I might add, doing it. Kim has also...
You don't know that. You don't know that. You don't know what I look right. Look right.
I mean, I'm looking right at you. I added the looking damn good.
Oh, part. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
That was not part of his email. Thought that was implied. Anyway, he says that he continues, Kim has also constructively criticized Jimmy and giving him high praise and support, along with great humor. Her impression of Kevin Wattell is the most funny thing ever in the Breaking Bad universe, in my opinion.
Very good.
Do you guys feel like Kim in season 5, episode 7, after watching this recent episode, 6:11 Breaking Bad? Are Gould and Gilligan treating the expectations that have come with the success of Breaking Bad like Chuck? Do they feel like the weight of that show's legacy, the way Jimmy felt the weight of Chuck's legacy?
Mm.
Are Gould and Gilligan wolves and we're sheep because they are on a self-destructive path like Jimmy?
To continue with the animal metaphors, maybe they are getting our goat a little bit in this episode by stringing us along just a little bit longer. Get two more friggin' episodes. You're gonna... How short is the string? How long is the string? It's like... Well, it's 45 times 2.
90.
90! Ha ha! Math. 90 minutes long. That's how long the string is, sirs.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm... look, I don't want to put, you know, thoughts in their head, but like, if it were me, I would be very sympathetic to people who want to see Walt and Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
I would be willing to do it, but only if I could make it worthwhile. And I think they've mostly done that. They've mostly done it. I don't know. I'm not 100% certain that I understand the question that you're getting at here, with us feeling like Kim sort of
like we got conned.
Like, yeah, like we got conned. Cause I don't feel conned by the show. Not like I do sometimes in a show like Westworld.
Yeah.
In this show, I just feel like I don't know. Maybe I feel the only way I would feel conned is if like I felt they gave in fully to audience pandering.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would not feel good about it. But it feels like they are doing this on their own terms and not in like a malicious trolling kind of way.
No. They're still trying to tell the story that they're trying to tell. It's just, for a couple of episodes, they've been doing it in a slightly infuriating way.
Or maybe your point here is that they have been telling their story so successfully to this point, and then they're kind of meandering in the last few episodes, but with their own goal in mind, and it's not the same goal that we have, and that's why I'm feeling negatively about last episode and this episode in some ways. Maybe that's the point you're getting at, and if that's the case, if it pays off, I no longer feel bad about it. But yes, I would be, you know, a sheep in that scenario, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones leading. I would be, if I'm dancing with Peter Gould, hey, he's freaking tall. He's probably going to be leading the dance. He's a big man. I'm a small guy. I don't think I could dip Peter Gould. Sorry.
I'd like to see you try.
I mean, if he wants to come to Cincinnati, I'll go to LA. I'll go to Albuquerque and meet him.
There you go. Oh, that's,
try and dip him.
Yeah, you'll travel for that.
Anyway. Yeah, I do hope it's a satisfying end, whether I feel like a sheep or not.
Yeah.
Anyway, last email here. Tiffany says a few things here. Is Gene's trajectory eerily similar to Walt's? Empire building while not really needing the money, losing everyone close to him, seeming not to care about risk or collateral damage. I think he's blown up his world similar to Walt.
Yeah, you can definitely, I think you can see the parallels there.
And if you're not talking about motivations, then I think, yeah, there's some parallel stuff happening there.
Definitely. Falling apart.
And you know, what I said about like mistakes and choices still applies there.
Mm-hmm.
I think like the fundamental difference here is Jimmy's making mistakes, Walt's making choices.
Yeah.
Also, the edit from the open grave to Gene in his bed reminded me of the shot of Walt through the hole in the floor after Skyler took the money in Crawl Space, season 4, episode 11. Was it that late?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. Just brilliant cinematography. Yes, I agree.
Yeah,
I love both of those shots.
She took that money to pay for
Ted.
To try to pay
fucking
Ted off.
Ted.
Fucking Ted.
Yeah.
What
I mean,
an idiot.
That scene is like cemented in my mind. I will never lose the image of Walt just cackling, the irony.
Yeah.
This fucking thick irony.
Yep.
Number 3, does Gene still have Saul's little black book? I was curious about that one.
Hmm.
Could.
Yeah.
Could, yeah.
And what use it is to him. When he can't.
Oh, wait. No, he doesn't. It was taken by the authorities, right?
Oh,
at his house.
Yeah, yeah. They did show that. They did show that. Yep.
Yeah.
The teaser for the very first episode of the season.
Yes, so never mind. No, he does not still have it.
Nope.
And finally, Breaking Bad as a series is thought to be a neo-Western. Does Better Call Saul read like one, too? I feel like it's been more in the way of a heist-type drama, but curious as to what others think.
Much more of a heist type drama.
Yeah. This is like a an older school kind of heist type
yeah.
thing, you know. These guys like their homages to older media, mm-hmm. older cinema, and I think it works out pretty well here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. This is not the same style as Breaking Bad, though I do love them both. And I think that's going to do it for the episode. I'm glad I could go out saying I love Better Call Saul, because I do. And, you know, yeah, one bad episode, one wasted episode, in my opinion, is not going to change that.
No, I'm not going to get on friggin' YouTube talking about how Better Call Saul is a waste of time.
You're on the internet right now talking about it.
But I'm not saying it's a waste of time.
Oh, okay.
I still like the show. I'm with you. One slight stinker doesn't ruin the whole bouquet for me. It's fine. I'll just ignore it. Just like you do when somebody farts in an elevator. You just ignore it.
Just look away.
Yeah.
Don't make eye contact with it.
With anybody.
It will pass eventually.
The doors will open.
Yep.
The culprit will leave. Everything will be fine.
All right. And with that, the two culprits are about to leave you. Thanks for listening this week. If you would like to send in feedback for next week's episode, you can do so at bcs@baldnews.com. I mean, shit, you can do Better Call Saul. You can type it out if you want. They all lead back to the same place. But we'll be considering that next time. And that's it for this week. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
See ya.
Bye.